Hey everybody, welcome to episode number 39 of the Film Club Podcast. My name is Jason.
My name's Anthony.
I'm Robert.
We didn't discuss that, but we barely,
we did not overlap.
Okay.
We survived.
So it worked out just fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're back after a few weeks. How was your guys' Christmas? You guys get anything good?
I got these turtle peaches.
You got that for yourself,
throat.
Right?
Oh, no, it's for my mom.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you tell me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Robert, did you? What did you get?
Oh, I got strep throat. That's what I got for Christmas.
Well, you also got a what's it called? A MacBook for yourself. So that was like
That's like Merry Christmas me.
Merry Christmas me.
I wanted to do something like
I
that.
I did. I bought a MacBook Pro.
Yeah.
Oh.
So did you switch out? And I know you were having trouble with the other one. Did you switch out? You switch it out?
Yeah, I did. I switched out because the other one that I bought was an open box one, and it actually had more RAM in it. But it was a previous version, which I wasn't aware of. The guy didn't tell me that. But that wasn't the problem. The problem was it started acting really weird on me. Like I started getting like this keychain bug that apparently has been happening to a lot of MacBooks from like previous versions before Mavericks that have updated to Maverick. I've been getting this bug. Apparently it's like really complicated to get rid of, so I just decided to exchange it for the newer MacBook. Yeah.
PC Master Race.
Yeah,
master of freaking super duper big problems. Unsolvable problems.
Yeah, I talked to Roy about like planning on building a PC or whatnot. Those plans are on hold for the time being just because money situations, whatever, but something I still want to do for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, guys, on this week's episode, we're going to be, we have a bunch of reviews since we've been away for a while. We have reviews of American Hustle, Anchorman 2, The Legend Continues, The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug, and Out of the Furnace. And we're also going to be counting down five films.
Oh, I didn't do that.
Yeah. We didn't talk about it. Five films that we promise to see next year.
Computer problems, man.
From our bucket
PC
list.
Master Race. problems.
So, yeah, I guess we're going to get right into it. The first movie we're going to be reviewing is Anchorman 2, The Legend Continues. Quick synopsis for you guys. With the 70s behind him, San Diego's top-rated newsman, Ron Burgundy, returns to take New York's first 24-hour news channel by storm. So I guess I'm starting off Anchorman 2. And I guess I would start by, you know, overall, I didn't like it too much. What I did like about it is how bizarre, like, the comedy was. Like, that the fact that they go for it and everything. And the satire is pretty good as well. But, like, my main issue with the film was I just didn't think it was very funny. It's a comedy. So, I mean, those would be my thoughts on it. What do you guys think of it?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
That was it?
Well, I just wanted to be general. I'll get into the details later, but yeah.
That's good. I don't know. I thought it was really, really good. And some things were over the top, like Steve Carell's character, which we're going to probably spend, like, a good, like, forever talking about. Like, I just didn't like him at all. I thought he was very over-centric and very much like Tropic Thunder. Never go full retard. You know, it was implied that he was dumb in the first film. And that's cool, right? I mean, like, you know, he's kind of stupid. But this one, he was just shouting all the time. He really had no... The joke was that he was dumb. Like, he was just out of everything. He was bad. And he was super loud.
He's like that, like, the Homer Simpson and...
But Homer can be smart.
No, but Homer he's gotten dumber and dumber over the years, you know? So they've kind of, like...
Oh, okay, okay.
They went overboard with that. Now, I'm not sure if you guys were, like, Boy Meets World fan.
I was. I don't remember it, though.
Yeah, the older brother, it's the same thing there. It just seems like he gets dumber and dumber. So, I mean, I didn't like Steve Carell's character. I found him, like, really grating. Like, he was just... I couldn't stand it. And another problem I have with his character was the Kristen Wiig scenes, like, the whole romance that goes there. Like, those felt like deleted scenes. Like, they shouldn't even have been in the movie. The movie's already pretty kind of long, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's an awful character. Whoever the hell wrote that character is just, doesn't deserve another writing job, for a comedy. That was just awkward choices. Mm-hmm. Everything is character. Like you said, the relationship, the love stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like textbook TV show writing, you know, what they did there. Let's try this, it's not going to work. Let's just put it in there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you said deleted scenes.
Yeah, for sure. Robert?
Well, I mean, I think sort of like the first one, this one's going to take a couple of viewings for people to really fall in love with it.
Yeah.
I feel it's because there's so many, like you said, bizarre jokes that are just in there.
Yeah.
That they happen really fast, and they're funny as hell. I love them. Story-wise, the first one is definitely more structured. Mm-hmm. This one just felt like a bunch of scenes that they shot, hey, let's do this, hey, let's do that, and then try to piece it together, which is fine with me, because I felt a little bit like that in the first one, but, I mean, the first one still had better structure on it. I agree with Steve Carell. I feel like the reason why they did that, because, you know, he's a star now. I guess one of the major problems is getting the second one made was because how are they going to get Steve Carell back in this movie? Because, you know, he's his own, he's a Hollywood star now. And when he did the first one, he wasn't as big.
Yeah.
And I thought, though, the cast, I mean, the chemistry between all of them, four guys, it's great. They work so well together.
Yeah.
I mean, you could tell they shot a ton of stuff, and there's probably going to be a second movie coming out with a DVD release.
You could also tell in the film it was segmented. You could tell they probably got them on set and they filmed a few scenes together, and then they went off and filmed other parts of the movie of Will Ferrell or whatnot. I wish we got more of the whole group together. I felt like there wasn't enough of that in the movie.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Brick's love story, yeah, I agree. It was a complete waste. Kristen Wiig, yeah, it was just him and Kristen Wiig trying to come up with bizarre things to say most of the time, and it wasn't funny, it wasn't clever. Yeah, no. They felt really forced. All the bizarre stuff that they were saying just felt so forced that it wasn't even funny. the screaming sequence when at the office, at the hallway, it just made me so mad. But the one thing that really pissed me off was the fact that, and I wish they didn't do this, they were taking things that made the first one funny and copied it. They were spoofing their own movie.
Yeah.
And I hated that. The battle sequence was a complete spoof off the first one. I wish they didn't do things like that. The condom thing was funny, but I feel like that was another spoof off the cologne thing from the first one.
Yeah, for sure. So it was funny, though. It was funny.
I think it was
No, the condom scene was great. I just wish... these guys are smart enough to make new jokes. Why would you kind of spoof your own movie? You guys are hilarious already. Why do that?
Yeah.
But the battle, the battle sequence is what made me the most upset, I think.
Yeah, I didn't mind that part.
Yeah.
The cameos were enough for me. Not to spoil it, but the cameos were enough. But the fight itself wasn't very entertaining.
And so. That kind of leads into the whole segment of the commentary of modern news and 24-hour music channel, 24-hour news, 24-hour... you know, country and all that stuff. You know, you have all these 24-hour networks. Mm-hmm. What does it mean to report news anymore? And I thought they did an excellent job commentating on our modern
basis
of what media is. It's just so powerful. Who would have thought you would be watching puppies sneeze and pandas and cats, all the time? And, they do that every goddamn morning now on TV. And, the announcer, the narrator would be like, doesn't sound much to you, but in the 80s, this has never been done before, So I thought that kind of commentary was excellent.
Yeah.
And the car chases, my God, this is exactly what they do now. Put a camera on something and go with it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
But the boss, I'm sorry, can we talk about that boss? I forgot her name. It's the most pointless character ever.
Oh, yeah, Megan Good. It was good to see Megan Good in a movie. She's getting kind of old, though. Yeah.
Megan Good? She was so pointless, though. She was the boss that seduces Ron or something. I don't know what she does. But
oh, she was okay.
She was so pointless, though. She was so pointless. There was really no reason for, she kind of is there and then disappears. And you're like, what the hell just happened?
I wish we would have got more of James Marsden. I really like him, so... I don't know. I felt like they didn't do much of his character. Like I felt like he probably could have brought it as far as like being really funny and stuff like that, but there wasn't as much, there wasn't anything to him. Really.
I mean, it's hard.
I felt like you guys both said you enjoyed the film. I felt like you guys are focusing on the negative. Like, what do you guys like about it?
Oh no! I don't want to jump into the joke spoilers.
Oh no, for sure.
You get two cents of a joke, and it's like kill it for somebody.
Yeah, for sure. I'm just saying. You guys said you enjoyed it. I felt like we all collectively felt.
We kind of talked about it though, like the satire on contemporary news anchors. I think it's so relevant to be. We have 24 hours, and it's going to be a lot of dogs and cats and car chases, you know.
So, yeah.
It's great. I mean, that's exactly O.J. Simpson, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, when I said the movie was like was less structured than the first one, I kind of didn't mean that in a bad way. I kind of meant like they had more fun with making this movie. Like they had more freedom to do whatever they wanted because you know the first one was so popular. So they, you know, they kind of had more freedom to do whatever the hell they wanted to do with these scenes. So, and it was great because from out of that came like these really bizarre jokes that were cracking me up. And you know, Ron Burgundy is a very selfish character who I find really hilarious. I mean, the scenes where he's with his son are fucking great. So that was really enjoyable. So, I mean, I don't know. It's just you're just watching kind of like people come up with these really great jokes and. I don't know. That's what I really enjoy. It's just fun for me to watch.
Cool. Anything more to say on it, Roy?
I don't think so.
All right. We want to give ratings then?
Ratings.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I'll go first. I enjoyed the bizarreness of it. Like, Anthony touched on the satire, how it's, you know, commentating on our news networks today. I thought that was great. I just didn't think it was that funny. I did get some good jokes here and there, but overall, I thought most of it was unfunny. So I would give it a 2.5 out of 5. Yeah, sounds right.
All right. I thought it was good. It's definitely a movie that takes a few more viewings to watch, you know, to catch the jokes and stuff. Just like the first one, you watch it a couple more times, you're gonna start laughing your ass off. Start seeing things that are really hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give it a 3.5 out of 5.
Yeah, I'm going to ditto that review. It's 3.5. There's some really solid humor here and there, and the satire, like Jason touched on, is strong, and it's just... some of the jokes are just... They just work. Oh my god, they're so goddamn funny. 3.5.
Cool. Well, moving on, American Hustle is the next movie we're going to review.
American Hustle.
So, I got a little quick synopsis of that.
Cool.
All right. It's a terrible tablet. All right.
Did you rewrite it?
I didn't reword it too much, but yeah, it is slightly reworded from the IMDb one. So, a con man, Irvin Rosenfeld, and his seductive girlfriend, Sidney Prosser, are forced to work with an FBI agent after getting busted. The plan being a ploy to entrap corrupt politicians and gangsters. So what do you guys think of American Hustle?
Oh boy. Oh boy. I really, really, really enjoyed this film. I had a blast watching it. the director, what's his name?
David O. Russell?
Gavin O'Connor?
David O. Russell?
Yeah, that's the wrong director. What? David O. Russell. Like, I read an interview like where Christian Bale had mentioned that most of the movie was improvised. And Bale went up to him like, hey, David, like, yeah, I was like, David, like, don't, like, what's going to happen when, you know, with the story, you know? And he said, like, he's like, Christian, I don't care about story. I care about characters. And that's this is that movie. This movie is about characters. And that's the perfect, like, that kind of sums up what this movie is about. It's just these characters, and the movie has. I enjoyed the pacing of the movie, a little reminiscent of Goodfellas for me,
for sure,
which I kind of enjoyed. Kind of an homage to that. Every character, every actor chosen for that character just felt like it was like the perfect fit. I don't know. It was definitely a fun film to watch. Definitely this Christian Bale, Irvine, right?
Yeah.
Irving. Yeah, he definitely carries. He is like the kind of like this the gooey warm center of the movie for me. You know, he's like delicious like chocolatey center. I don't know, like he was so fucking great in this movie. His character was like what I loved about his character, and he kind of related to Jeremy Renner's character, is like, you know, he does bad things, but he doesn't for the good of his son or his family, or you know, to try to survive, and he kind of connects with that. And you can see Irving's character kind of like, you know, go through the mill and, you know, being kind of manipulated and used, and you see it in his eyes, you know, and he's just like, it's great. I just love seeing the poor guy getting tortured like that, but, you know, when he really doesn't deserve it, you know? So there was really great scenes like that for me, and I don't know if you guys want to touch on it, but I loved every character. It just all felt right.
I really enjoyed the film like a whole lot. The pacing, wonderful. Just, you never really have to like feel kind of annoyed or bothered by any sort of scene changing and such. Christian Bale just destroys in this film.
I know, dude. He fucking rocks so it, good. Man.
It starts off strong, like these retro intro. Trademarks for the companies.
Oh, they were great. They were so great.
The whole like relic, retro, 70s type, 60s. Such a nice touch. There's that one, you were kind of touching on it, Rob. There's this part where the characters, what's that one guy's name? The agent, the main, the
I don't know the name guy. In the movie.
Yeah.
Bradley Cooper.
Well, anyway, the agent.
Yeah, Bradley Cooper.
Bradley Cooper. So he's like, goes in and he says a line, something like, I bet you're sick of me, like these guys right here. And it's like, you've gone, like, that's like 2 hour mark. So you really can... They've developed such a sweet relationship that what he's saying in the film, actually, he actually means it. You know, like, I bet I've been together with these characters, like, being 2 hours, that I bet you're sick of me. You know, it's like, it's totally relatable for fourth wall, like, these characters work, and they are intertwined, and they're so involved with each other that they've passed the point of yeah, it's just, it's really real. I really enjoy, their chemistry, the character's chemistry is so strong. Yeah. We can go on and on about clothing, acting, writing, scenery, soundtrack, strong woman lead actors. Everything really worked for me. It rang all the bells. All the bells. I mean, like, how do you do that? I guess let me segue into this thing. We've done it for a podcast before. I think it was with Chris. Can you center my camera?
No, I mean, I don't know.
Okay, so... if you guys can see that? You guys see that?
No.
So, I don't think it passes all the tests, but it's kind of like a litmus test for women in movies. And... they tried hard. I mean, like, I think they get a pass for, number one, are there at least two women in the film?
Yeah.
Two, do they talk to each other? They do talk to each other. But then three, about something other than a man. I mean, like, oh, God, you get, give them a free pass, damn it. They tried. They tried. I want to say they didn't, they talked about things other than men, but I don't think they did. Oh, well. Yeah.
But both of the females obviously are attached, you know, to Christian Bale's character. So,
yes,
I mean that's what the story in itself. So I don't have an issue with that. They still come off as really strong female characters.
Yes.
So, cool.
But what I loved about, like, they both weren't like it wasn't like they were both in love with him. Like, I mean, maybe Amy Adams' character probably was, but from Jennifer Lawrence's perspective, she was somebody who was just manipulating him and using him. Mm-hmm. So I thought, you know, they were both fighting for him for different reasons, at least, you know. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I also loved the movie. Thought it was great. You guys pretty much touched on everything I was going to touch on. I mean, the cast is amazing. Standouts being Christian Bale. And,
yeah.
And I don't know. If I had to pick one of the females, I would go with Jennifer Lawrence as far as the performance itself. But that's not to say anything, because Amy Adams is incredible in this.
But who wore it? She's
like a hero in this movie. She was, Amy Adams was like the hero in the movie. It was amazing.
Well, Amy Adams in other movies has had that peach fuzzy face, so, yeah.
Superman, is that Superman?
No, it's just her face. Full slate, right? I mean, in The Fighter, I believe. I saw her peach fuzz.
I believe you see it in Superman as well. You chauvinistic, mother, misogynistic fuck.
But the casting was...
She shouldn't be in Hollywood because her face is a little fuzzy. Shave, motherfucker. How about that?
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed it. I mean, it's incredibly entertaining, like you guys said. I definitely got a good Goodfellas vibe. Like, even going into it, I knew, I'm like, oh, this is kind of David Russell's Goodfellas with the whole narration and everything. I didn't think he matched the energy of Goodfellas, but, like, who can really match that type of energy? But I still really love the film. And I thought there was, in a few of the characters, you know, there was something to relate to. There was heart there with the Christian Bale character. I really felt for him because, you know,
oh my God.
It really is just a love story. And so it's kind of interesting to watch the movie and think, and, you know, hope it is what you want it to be as far as, you know, characters' motivations between him and Amy Adams and stuff like that. And I like where they go with that without spoiling it. I felt like that was the center of the film. But I also felt for Jennifer Lawrence's character. You know, she's a, you know, woman who just wants to be loved. Hopefully she could figure that out, but yeah.
Yeah.
That was good. I really loved it.
Speaking of love and such, like a love film, mm-hmm. there is like this really strong bond between, what's his name? Irving and the mayor of New Jersey.
Yeah.
Oh, their relationship is so strong. It was just like, wretching watching the whole film and seeing how strong their relationship is. And it's just like, come on, this film is painful watching those two just go at it and
when he gets the gift and he like you see Christian Bale's like eyes going like you did this for me, you got this for me, like no he's like, no one's ever giving me anything. The science, I know, and he was like
science oven.
Oh my God, he was like the first time somebody was actually nice to him, you know, and like who didn't want something from him, and it was definitely like very heartwarming. And oh man, so that scene at the house too, it's just ridiculous, man. I was tearing up and everything, man. It was great.
Yeah.
And I have no idea where this movie got nominated as a comedy for the Golden Globes, but then the Golden Globes is a fucking circus, so I don't even understand why.
That's funny because I was about to mention. I'm like, we didn't even talk about the humor. Yeah. The movie's fucking
it's funny as hell.
It's funny as hell.
And I would rather get a comedy nomination because it's probably not going to win in the drama category, and it's probably a shoe-in for the comedy.
Yeah. I hate the Golden Globes.
If Christian Bale killed it in the acting department, oh my God, Jennifer Lawrence nailed it out the park in the comedy. Yeah. She's just like most of her life.
Oh God, so powerful.
I came into this movie being really worried about the women in the film. Like, I really thought Sydney was going to be, everyone's in love with me, and it's going to be like just. Everyone's gonna fall in love with her. Everyone's gonna want to marry her. Everyone's gonna wife
you.
That's kind of how the movie goes.
Have you
right?
seen his other films? Though you've seen The Fighter. No, you've seen David O'Russell.
So. Yeah, I've seen The Fighter.
Those are strong female characters.
Okay, I mean, that's awesome.
Have you seen Silver Linings Playbook?
You gotta see. You have to see Silver Linings Playbook.
No, I don't think I've seen
she's
that.
She's great in that too.
So I was really, and then Jennifer Lawrence comes in, and they really put her off as this Barbie that's only gonna, you know, she gets away with like everything goes on fire. I was like, oh. my God, where's this film going to go? And it happily reversed itself completely. Like, everybody retributes themselves, and they end up all being strong female leads. And what is it? The ditzy Jennifer Lawrence ends up being, like, one of the smarter characters. There's that one point where she's just like, that's why I did it. That's why I did it. I read a book. You know, like, yeah. What's the title of the book?
Yeah. She just, I think that was her way of trying to, like, finally feel like a part of something, even though it was just a complete fluke. She's like, yeah, like, I'm a part of something now. I thought that was great, though.
She owned it. And definitely. He admitted it, too. He had to admit defeat. He was just like, yeah, you got me there, hon. You totally, I understand.
But, yeah. And yeah, I mean, Amy Adams, like that's, I mean, I just feel like equally, like, they're both on, like, other sides of the spectrum, Amy Adams and Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah.
Amy Adams was a great character who definitely wanted to be somebody else. That whole, like, idea of, like, you know, like she even said this in when she narrates, like, I've always, like, even wanted to be somebody, you know, else, or, you know, I want to be another person. I want to be anybody but me or something, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's great. And she definitely says it a lot in the movie. And I don't know, someone can relate to that, you know, where you're just not happy with who you are and you want to be somebody different, and she does that for herself. And those motives to why she does these things, I don't know, like, it's so weird because these motives are all justified for every one of them, mm-hmm. every character, except for maybe Bradley Cooper, but I felt like he was just kind of a loose cannon, but in a good way.
Yeah. Now, he was a loose cannon because, you know, his whole path was so, they made him so loose cannon that, you know, they put him in his, you show his home life, right? Like, his, you know, he's watching his elder mom. He's got a fiance that he constantly doesn't want to talk about. And he's just, you know, he's very, like, New York slums, like, boy from the street. Yet he's, like, just in fire. Like, how could you even, like, you know, you're doing this whole, like, we've never fought crime like this. We've never fought corruption like this. We want, you know, past Watergate, we have to fight crime. That's my mission, is to fight corruption in politics. So that's his whole lead. And he knows he's going towards the mob, and he's still suicide bombing himself. Like, as a poor boy in New York, and he's just like, he's not thinking, there's no way you can't know how dangerous the mafia is. This is post-Godfather, yeah, this is Jersey. Post, like, this is Jersey. 1920s, right. Jersey, yeah. So, I mean, all this is given knowledge, this is all, like, things, and he's still going for it, you know, kind of like that whole, that one officer that said all he wants is fame, you know, that's his whole thing, is that he's just going for fame. It's more like he was completely, like, irresponsibly going after fame.
Yeah, for sure.
Like,
I mean,
if anyone should be worried about the mob, it should have been him.
There's, like, one scene where he's clearly, like, snorting something. So, I mean, it makes sense that he's a loose cannon. And he's, like, just, you know, going wild the whole time. Like, I mean, that's his aspirations, I guess. I mean, I don't think there's...
But, like,
I don't think there's much totally... to his character, there's much substance to it.
It's true.
But he's still very entertaining, like, to watch.
I thought he ghosted like the police chief's bio. Like, they introduced the police chief like that, you know? Like, his bio
for sure.
is his
like,
character.
That was his whole, like, his whole motivation, like, a, was he wanted
like
to take
ditto.
Care of people, yeah.
It's the same fucking character.
Yeah.
Oh my God, and Louis C.K., guys.
It was great, man.
He's so great.
Yeah, he was good.
I was so mad I didn't get to see the end of that ice fishing story.
We did at the end of it.
But it was good. I was happy to see
Spoilers.
Him. He's a very capable actor. So
yeah,
definitely.
I mean, it was just Louis C.K. being Louis C.K., but nothing wrong with that. So
nope,
no.
It's true.
Yeah. Is there anything you guys didn't like about the movie?
I wish I took notes. Like, there's a point where it's just like it fell apart for me.
Yeah?
But I wasn't taking good notes. It totally recovered. So even if I did have doubts, the movie just totally, you know, wrapped it up.
I mean, I'm thinking back, like, thinking about, okay, is there anything bad I can say about it? Not wanting to, but just thinking any negative. I would say, like, the lack of substance, I guess. In some of the characters, I guess. But then I was thinking, that kind of makes sense with who these characters are. Like, you know, they're con artists, they're liars, they're manipulators. And that's who they are. So maybe there really isn't, you know, so much underneath that.
Yeah.
Besides that. So I thought, you know, for the movie it worked. Like, it doesn't have to be about anything more than that. And, you know, and I did get that from the mayor, you know, how tragic that is. And I did get that from Christian Bale's character.
painful.
And even Jennifer Lawrence's character, like, so there was people you could connect to, so it kind of didn't, I didn't care that not every character in the film is, like, incredibly deep or whatnot, so, yeah.
Yeah.
Anything else you guys have to say?
No.
What is that?
All right, you
wanna... I just,
Soundtrack.
I love the structure of the movie. I love the way it opens. It just says, like, you know, it's perfect for how the film. I feel it captures how the film was shot. Does some of this stuff happen? Or that's what it says, right?
Some of these things actually happen.
Like, some of these things actually happen, and it's like it's not a base. It's not based on a true story. It's not some of it happened. It's just it's very messy, but in a good way. The film, like, you know how the film is. And I don't know, it's just, it's kind of like you just enjoy where these characters are going. You don't wonder if this actually happened or not. It's like, yeah, some of it happened, sure. You know, you just enjoy it.
Yeah.
And it fits perfectly with the pacing of the film.
Yeah. I mean, I really enjoyed it. Enjoyed the cast. It actually reminded me of Oceans, like the Oceans movies. But obviously a much more elegant, much more finely acted version of Ocean's 11 or something like that.
Oh my god, we didn't even talk about him.
And it's like
De Niro. Who? De Niro was scary as fuck.
Don't
spoil that De Niro's in it.
That was kind of a surprise.
Yeah, no one knew. Like when he popped up, I'm like,
oh, no one knew?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
No, he's not even on IMDb.
Oh wow, that's crazy. Spoiler.
Yeah, but I really enjoyed it. It's nice. You know, David Arusso, guy's fucking on fire.
Yeah, he is. He's definitely...
You know, a couple years ago, he was attached to do the film adaptation of the video game Uncharted with Mark Wahlberg attached. And I'm so glad he got out of that. And he made three good movies in a row. So
he was going to make an Uncharted movie?
Yeah. So, it was, you know, he's doing great work. I really love this movie. I'm not gonna give it the perfect score, but I give it a 4.5 out of 5. Yeah.
I'm gonna give it the perfect score, Jason.
Okay.
I'm gonna do it because I fucking love this movie. Great characters. I mean, story, not as far as storytelling, but these characters just were so amazing. I don't know. There was something I was gonna say and I totally forgot, but yeah, I'm just gonna give it a 5 out of 5.
Yeah, I'm going to follow Boat, 5 out of 5, fantastic film, everything nailed it for me, like, just, you know, I listed it earlier, but I'll do it again, clothing, writing, acting, scenery, soundtrack, freaking strong woman leads, Christian Bale destroys, it's just excellent film, 5 stars.
Yeah.
Alright, cool. So moving on, our next review is for The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug.
Smaug.
And the synopsis is the dwarves.
Smug.
The dwarves, along with Bilbo Baggins and Gandalf the Grey, continue their quest to reclaim Erebor, their homeland, from Smaug. That's it. So, Roy, you want to get this one started?
Sure. So the film comes in. Did I see it first? Or?
I think you saw it first.
Yeah,
I saw it first. So, yeah, I went release day, or, like, Saturday or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, I really enjoyed it. I went there with the 3D and the high frame rate. Sweet. Rob ruined my world saying that the first one I seen at Navy Pier when that first Hobbit came out wasn't in high frame rate. I'm pretty sure that's what I was suckered into, why I went to that location, so...
Yeah,
joining your fight, Rob. Then. I'm joining that fight. Let's bring that place to the ground, man.
No, you're reversing it now. That's when they were showing the film. Now they're digital.
So it was great. I mean, like, that whole, like, high frame rate stuff, it feels, like, super fast, which is really weird, like, how to, like, get that kind of impression out of it. It feels like the pace is elevated, and it's strange, but I like it. The 3D, not noticeable, I don't think. Mm-hmm. It's here and there, but, you know, like, 3D's always give or take, like, who hands going at you. What is it? I thought as far as the Lord of the Rings series, the battle scenes in this film, which is, I don't want to blame it on, you know, this is the last Lord of the Rings I've seen, but I felt like this is like the first film where the battle scenes actually stuck with me. Like, I know maybe the first film, because there isn't, you know, the orcs coming out of the ground and like the army going at them, that's kind of memorable and that's kind of cool. And the ghost army, that's like memorable because it was so stupid. And ghost army! What's our only hope is summoning ghosts, you know, like, how are we going to get rid of these thousands and thousands of man army ghosts? So I thought the fighting, the action scenes were so much more memorable. So that was a high point for me. And I guess that's, I don't know. I would say, like, I hope it's not affected by just, it's the last Lord of the Rings film I've seen. But for me, I think it's the strongest Lord of the Rings of the series.
Okay. Well, I didn't like it. Oh no! First, I will start off. I did really want to see it in high frame rate, and I didn't just because the time didn't work out. So that was disappointing because I did, you know, going into the first Hobbit that me and Robert watched together, like, I really enjoyed the high frame rate, but I did not think I would because I hate when they put motion flow on TVs. Like, it looks terrible, and it just looks really similar to that. But you know, you get used to it, and it just looks like hyper realistic, and I really enjoyed it. So it's kind of a shame I didn't see it that, you know, in that way. But you know, other than the barrow action scene, which is like that's the scene everybody's talking about. Like, that's the, from, you know, for me as well, that's the highlight of the action in this movie. But I just felt the movie was really boring. I just, like, the first Hobbit, I did not, like, feel the length whatsoever. And this one, like, I felt it, like, you know, every 10 minutes. Like, it just felt really long to me. And, I don't know, that's never good. And, yeah. I mean, few issues I had with it. It's called The Hobbit. Where the fuck is The Hobbit? Like, he's barely in the movie. Like, okay. And then the tie-ins, like, I mean, whatever. I'm going to rant here for a second, so bear with me. I mean, we already know we're getting three movies. You know, people thought that was ridiculous, which it is. You know, what the original film is, or the original book is, what, like 200 pages or something like that? But whatever. We have to accept the fact that they decided to make this into three movies. Practically 3-hour movies, which is just overkill. And, like, watching this one, I mean, there was a little bit of it in the first Hobbit, but this one felt like, hey, we need to trace the origin of everything that happens in the Lord of the Rings movies. It's like, I don't give a shit about that. I've already watched the three movies. I already know what happens. I don't need to see or keep being told how dark forces are rising, a dark army is being built. Like, it's fucking ridiculous. Like, it's like, I don't need all this. It's fine. Like, he made three movies. Just make 3 2-hour movies. They're nice and brisk and easy to watch. And this one, I just felt the length because it felt so monotone. Like, they kept doing that over and over and over again. So,
but it was needed, though.
It wasn't fucking needed.
Judging from the first film, you wouldn't know anything was going on. You just know there's a dragon. And we have to steal something from it.
Well, you know what?
You would never know it was implied.
I like the first one because the first one is, hey, we need to go to our kingdom. We need to go to our kingdom and we need to get back our home. That's the story. This movie's called The Hobbit. It's about Bilbo Baggins helping the dwarves get back their home. That is all I give a shit about is them finding, getting back their home. Like, that's it. Why do we need all this extra stuff?
Because you got to blame that on the fact that the studios wanted to make as many movies as possible out of this book.
Yeah.
And so what did they end up doing? Just filling the movie up with stuff from, like, other tying parts of the story.
Tying it in just religiously.
I heard most of the shit that happens in this movie isn't even in the book. Like, mostly all of it isn't even part of the book.
It's in some other, but, like, companion.
But doesn't that make sense, though? Like what Rob's saying, though. He's saying, like, they are milking the series. They want them to tie. They want it to matter more. And I, you know, as much as that seems like milking, and it is milking,
yeah,
that still ties in for the movie watchers that are going to be there for goddamn 3 hours because you got another damn movie.
Yeah, which just sucks because, like, if you already see a, if you already seen a story being told, this is just like the same thing. Like, think of a like something like Cowboy Bebop. You see Cowboy Bebop, you see this great anime. That would be like them making an anime showing the early days of Spike Spiegel. You know, when he was.
But
fucking
but
working with Vicious or whatever the hell his name is. It's the same thing.
There's nothing,
like,
there's nothing to preview into that, though. That's not... I don't think that's a good analogy.
No,
I mean, there's not... There's,
no, the
there's
problem
a huge,
is,
there
the
is
problem
that
is they
huge
feel
evil.
The need to tell an origin of the events that happened in Lord of the Rings films. Like, I wouldn't want to see an origin of what brought Spike Spiegel into the events of Cowboy Bebop. And I don't need to see that, because I already... Like, this is the part that was great. This is the part that I cared about. This was a good story. Like, I don't need to see what led into this. And especially if I'm watching a movie called The Hobbit, like, that's what I'm invested in. Like, the first Hobbit film was my favorite. Like, I liked it more than any of the Lord of the Rings movies. And it's just because it was felt less serious, and it was just a simple story.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Hey, let's help the dwarves get back their land with this fire-breathing dragon, you know, protecting it. And then... To this one, I felt like it lost it, and it just went overboard on the tie-ins to the three movies that follow it. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, but I expect that, though.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, there's three movies now.
What?
We're going to expect it, but does that make it good just because they decided there
are
only three movies?
I agree with you, but yeah, there's nothing we can do about it.
Like,
Peter Jackson even said when they were making him, oh, yeah, we're going to take stuff from, like, other companion books, you know, that tells the history of, like, you know, Middle Earth and stuff to fill in the gaps. And you're like,
yeah.
Like, oh, it is, I guess, whatever, you know. People back then were like, okay, whatever about it. But it's definitely, yeah, you can tell that it's not really a good direction to go, because it makes the movies kind of, you can tell that they're being milked, and, you know, it sucks.
Yeah.
I got to disagree with you, though, on the fact that, this one was boring. I felt the first one was a lot more boring than this one. I felt the first one seemed like an.
Yeah.
like an extended version of its own like film. Mm-hmm. Like the extended DVD version was what we were watching. Like, I even said that on the review for the first Hobbit. Like, they just felt like they were putting in all these like scenes just to fill in the time, and I didn't feel it in this one. This one definitely focused more on the dwarves, definitely, because the only time you saw Bilbo is like. The million, like, you saw him, like, a bunch of times, but every time you saw him, it was just him saving the dwarves' lives. Like, the guy, fucking Bilbo saved their lives in this movie, like, 10 times, and none of them ever said thank you,
and,
or, like, whatever.
When Bilbo gets into it, like, into the dwarves' lives, he's like, oh, he's so invasive, he doesn't belong there. Like, the dwarves just seem like, oh, great job, Bilbo. And it's like, no, it's not their... It's not... Like, you were the... They gave up on their whole damn conquest because they didn't wait for,
that
like,
is that is the issue
10
with
more
the film.
On that?
That is
that's,
the issue.
That's bullshit.
Listen, that is the issue with the film in general. Why
oh,
the fuck do they
so
need
smart,
Bilbo Baggins?
Bilbo.
Why
Bilbo,
do they need him?
So smart.
Why do they need him? And why do they need him to do this? It seems retarded.
Because Dorothy's so stupid.
He's like, oh, he can sneak around really well. Okay.
No. Yeah.
So that's why you brought him along.
I think kind of. No. But I think even like there's a scene where Smaug even tells him in the cave, like, you think they brought you along because, you know, this and that. They just fucking wanted to use you. You know, you're this person
that came here, sneaking around.
They just wanted to use your ass.
I mean, anyway, I completely agree with you of what you're saying. Of when Bilbo is there, it feels like why does he need to be there? And I agree with that. Like, I didn't get
that sense
in the first film,
yeah,
but
true.
This one I definitely agree with.
Because he was only there when he was saving their lives in this one. He really wasn't there for anything else.
Yeah.
And you can definitely tell that. Why is he in this movie? Like, he's not even really in it story-wise. He's just there to save their asses, like, for the millionth time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I definitely agree with you guys on that one. But, yeah, I definitely felt the pacing was better than the first one. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with that.
I mean,
like,
the reason
all,
I...
Like, it's except long, but then, I mean, all of them are.
The Gandalf stuff was a little boring.
The Gandalf stuff really irked me because I felt like that whole section of the film was for the purpose of, you know, tying it into Lord of the Rings. That didn't even need to be there. Like,
no, it didn't. Like, they were really picking at straws with trying to even. They couldn't even tell the story right. They're walking through the maze labyrinth prison, and they're you know, Gandalf is going, he's talking. And then they summon that that crazy rabbit rider dude, and it's like, it's so unnecessary. There's nothing going on there. There's no depth to that portion. It just felt so useless. That's one of my big gripes, like, watching the film. I was like, why was that? It doesn't even tie into the next time you see Gandalf. So it's like,
But even with later, like during the climax of the film, when, you know, Bilbo finally is, you know, meeting Smaug, and then the dwarves, you know, that whole set piece, it felt so scatterbrained, because then they were skipping over to what the hell's going on with Gandalf, and then they're skipping over to what's going on in Lake Town. Like, it felt so, like, scattered. Just editing was all over the place. I don't know.
Speaking of Lake Town, that was my favorite scenes. It was just like,
how do you run a government?
We know what that's going to be used for.
That was cheesy. But I just really enjoyed the corrupt politician.
Can we talk about that ending? It just pissed me off so much. That ending fucking made me so mad.
Dude, I really like the ending.
Is this your first rodeo, man?
I really enjoyed the ending.
No.
Yeah. It's a middle film. How could it not be, like, fucked up?
Every other Lord of the Rings movies, even the Two Towers, when they ended, they at least within its own structure, it had kind of like a feeling of, you know, some resolution or just calmness. This one just ended right
when
it was like getting
really
good. What's
wrong with
a
great cliffhanger? It's a good cliffhanger. Yeah. That cliffhanger was fantastic. You guys pissed him off. He's coming to Lake Town.
Yeah.
All right, we're ending it. Now it's on the next movie.
If Lake Town was maybe farther away, then it'd be cool, but Lake Town is literally, like, right down the road. It's like, oh, what the fuck did it end?
Where else are they going to end it? Where else are they going to end it?
It was stupid. It was like, I compared it to edging on Facebook the other day. You guys know what edging is?
No.
It's where you stop yourself from, like, to the right where you're about to have an orgasm, but you stop yourself. That's what it was cinematically for me. Like, I was getting really good. I was really getting into it finally, and it just fucking stopped.
I actually thought it was kind of funny, because, like, as they're setting up the ending, you could tell, like, the ending was so calculated. Like, the way the shots were changing, and they were kind of, like, showing each individual character.
Faster.
I'm like, this is coming to a close right now. It's
like
about
Walking
to end.
Dead. Like Walking Dead, the game, when things get fast.
Yeah.
Like, I guess they're closing it, and then they closed it.
I enjoyed the ending. It was a good cliffhanger.
I mean, it's cool if the movie is coming out like 6 months later, but when you got to wait another year, that kind of ending is just mean. It's just mean. It's mean-spirited. It really is. It made me mad.
I don't think it. I mean, there's not much choice there.
I mean,
you know,
whenever I watch every other Lord of the Rings movies, like the ending, I felt satisfied and go, okay, cool. Now I can't wait to see the next one. This one just like was cut you off right in the, I don't know, just I don't know, right in the, like.
Yeah.
So, best moment or something.
I don't know.
You guys want to get to
Shmout? If my memory serves me right, there was some freaking pissed off people for Lord. I was in a theater where everyone was pissed too as well.
Yeah.
Like, people had to whisper, like, there's actually two more. And it's like, you know, like, oh, don't let,
there's only
let
one
this
more,
guy
right?
come up as a dumbass. Well, Lord of the Rings. I'm talking about the first one, History.
Oh, okay.
Like,
sorry.
The first film. People were so mad when Lord of the Rings was over, and they're like, what the hell?
Well, I mean, you also really, have to think really about it. There's a lot of people who are, you know, in the cinemas, like, probably watching this one and thinking there's not another part, you know? Because unless they read it on the internet that, hey, this is a three-part, you know, Hobbit movies, three Hobbit movies, they're not going to know. And then it kind of ends like that. I mean, Rudy didn't know. I saw it with Rudy, and he's like, oh, you know, this movie's long. Now we got to go into the whole part where he attacks Lake Town, and he gets killed with the arrow or whatnot. And he didn't know.
That's true.
But then again, he's Rudy, and Rudy doesn't pay attention to that stuff. So,
But you bring up an excellent point, though. How insulting is that to show that stupid arrow thing that, you know, his father?
Oh yeah, it was
acted up on.
I was like, I wonder what's going to happen over. In the next movie.
Yeah. I don't know. Oh, so Smaug, we haven't gotten into Smaug. How do you guys like
So good. When they introduce him with that huge, huge, like, lair with all the gold, it's just like, you know, with folklore with dragons as far as, like, Dungeons & Dragons go, and, like, fantasy, like, it's just, he's the stereotypical dragon, he plays it so well. just the love of gold. And it's like, what the hell is a dragon going to do with all that gold? But just the way he just loves it. And he's like, the lair just looks so good. Like, just cinematography-wise, I thought the lair was awesome. And Smaug just being intertwined with it. And even, like, Bilbo walking around and just slipping in the gold.
Yeah.
So good. So good. I thought it was shot so well.
Okay, so the dragon looks great. Like, it looks really good. Does it really look any better than the dragon from Dragonheart?
Oh, that's funny.
Oh, God. That's funny. No, dude, the reason why I like
it... I don't have a picture.
Oh, why didn't you bring
it? I know it's voiced by Sean Connery. That's about it.
The reason why I love HFR is that it makes CG look really good. It definitely makes it look better,
uh-huh.
And especially in 3D. So, like, yeah, Smaug looked amazing. Like, I thought he looked great.
Yeah, I thought he looked good, too.
Yeah, he looked great. I mean, the character itself, like, I thought I was going to fall in love with the character, but I really didn't, like.
Well, there's no doubt.
I didn't think there was anything that stood out with him, stood out about him.
No, I agree. It was very cliche, it's kind of what you expect if a dragon could talk.
I mean, it's nice. Yeah, it's nice that it
I
talks.
Need all this gold for no other reason.
Yeah.
But he was... He was hinting, you know, he made them, you know, like, really question why he's even there. Like you said, why the hell is it...
No, he did.
The Hobbit even there. He dug into his psyche and was answering questions just for
he
you.
He was really good at telling Bilbo that, which is why when you were like, oh, you know...
Hey, I enjoyed Bilbo in the first one. But then this one just made
he
me
was
think...
Great at the first
this
one.
Just made me think, like, why is he here? Why did they get Frodo to bring the ring?
Yeah, like, him it doesn't make any sense. Like 20 times in the movie. That's
so,
all
like, the entire... So, the entire, you know, ideas or, like, for these characters that all these movies are based on doesn't make sense. Or doesn't have, like, proper reasoning to it.
Okay, that lady, the chick from Lost, she's a made-up character, right? She was never in the books, right?
Yeah.
The elf chick. Okay, that ridiculous love story. Can we talk about that?
Wait, the love story between...
I enjoyed Kate. I thought Kate was good.
Yeah, I didn't mind
She was
her.
Good.
Yeah.
But the whole love story thing, it's just, I'm sorry, it was ridiculous.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Like, you bring in the character that's made up, and you just make, like Anthony says, you know, you bring, like, all these strong female characters that has always got to be something about her loving a guy, you know?
Yeah.
And she's a strong female character, but then they, you know, let's make her fall in love with one of the dwarves.
She loved one of the normal looking dwarves.
Yeah. she did, right? Oh, you look normal, and you're taller.
You're like one of the
you,
only normal ones.
Like, you're shallow. You shallow, bitch.
No. Are you guys getting distortion on your end?
A little bit from Rob, yeah.
Yeah.
No.
My bad.
No, it's not your fault. We get into fucking zombie Legolas. Like, this...
it's oh, yeah. So,
I mean,
yeah.
even in the previews, I'm like, is this the same fucking character? Like, is there something wrong with him where he's...
He phoned it in or something? Yeah, he's just phoning it in, man.
Does he do anything besides be Legolas now? Like, what are they going to do? What are they going to do after this one?
Besides Legolas.
He decided to do Elizabeth Town after Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, I don't know. This character was just like, what is going on? Like, who is this guy? I mean, I actually heard he's not in the Hobbit. I'm not sure if this is right. I thought I heard someone mention it.
I'm pretty sure he's not in the Hobbit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Oh, well, that's terrible.
Anything else left to say?
I don't think so.
No, man.
I think we covered it.
All right, you want to wrap it up first, Roy?
Sure. The film, I enjoyed it. I'm starting to think that because it's the last one I've seen, it's one of the better,
yeah.
Which feels like it might be ruining my take on it. But I really liked this one. I enjoy the whole aspects of the same reasons you liked the first one, Jason, like they're going back to take their homeland. But isn't that funny that their homeland, they were going to give up on the whole damn quest until Bilbo waited 5 more minutes.
I thought that was ridiculous.
Technically, it was 30
they
seconds.
All that time to go over there, and we can't find the keyhole. We just can't find it. What can we do?
Let's go.
It just kind of discredits like their whole quest to find it, which is fine. That's why, you know, whatever. I really enjoyed it. I know it was extremely long film, but I did really feel like all the hatred you had for, oh, they shouldn't flash back and all that. I felt like they finally made a movie, which is, you know, it's write-ins, right? They had to fill time and all that. But, you know, I'm sitting here. I know it's going to be a long film. And this whole fact that, yeah, they had to, like, I guess the whole Homeland thing didn't really fill in with me until this one. Mm-hmm. But knowing that they're going to, you know, like the whole, they're tying it into the new series, like prequel style, really worked for me. Like, there was something more echoing about the looming evil that's coming. Because, you know, yeah. the first Lord of the Rings book, you hear about this, you know, this treacherous looming forces that are coming. So knowing that there's early signs of it gives the movie, our film series, a little more purpose, I felt like. So being a fan of the series and them being tie-ins, I enjoyed it. At the time, I think, like, if we did this podcast, like, that weekend, I would probably give it a 4.5. But talking about it for a while, give it a 4.
All right. Robert?
I looked at the time for the length of the first one compared to this one. This one's actually 4 minutes shorter. But I don't know. This one definitely didn't feel as long as when I watched the first one. I felt, yeah, definitely Bilbo was kind of like in the background just saving little dwarves' lives, and it was mostly focused on the dwarves this time. Yeah. Which is okay, but you know, Bilbo is a very likable character. Like, the guy, Martin Freeman, is really good playing Bilbo, so it sucked that you didn't get to see, like, a bigger story from him in this movie. I mean, the only time he really kind of, like, grows out of that is when he's, like, with the gold with Smaug, you know, talking to him.
Yeah.
I think that was one of the better scenes in the films. Other than that, you know, I was just kind of going with the flow of the film. The burial scene was great. It was all right. I mean, it was definitely better for me than the first one, so I don't remember what I rated the first one, but I'm going to give this one a 3 out of 5.
All right. I mean, like I said, I felt the length of this one, unfortunately. And, you know, part of me thinks it could have to do with the way I watched it. I mean, the allure of seeing the first one was seeing it in high frame rate. So, you know, I was blown away by the visuals, and then seeing this one non-3D, non-high frame rate. And so you don't have that to go off of, you know, which, you know, obviously adds energy to the person watching it. So that could or couldn't be an issue, but I do not like the idea of going back to see this movie again in theaters, so who knows?
Fuck that.
It will never be known. Yeah. And like I said, I had major gripes with the tie-ins. I mean, I understand if you like seeing the origin of that, that's understandable. I just felt like all of those tie-ins were very single note. There was no variety to them, you know. So that's why, to me, it got kind of grating to see that stuff. But I'm, you know, even though Robert enjoyed it somewhat, and I seem like I'm harder on it, I'm going to go with the same rating of 3 out of 5. So, yeah. All right. Out of the furnace.
Woo! Keep that energy up.
So,
Springsteen
the movie. Put your hands up.
So when Rodney
I'll be surfing the net, guys. Right.
Okay. So when Rodney Bays mysteriously disappears and law enforcement doesn't follow through fast enough, his older brother Russell takes matters into his own hands to find justice.
Ooh. Justice right. served.
So you want to start, or you want me to start?
I guess I'll start. It's a very, very oddly paced film. I mean, it's,
I wouldn't say odd, it's just very mundane, like you said. You said it perfectly, so it's very mundane.
It's like, the movie flows like, we're going to make this movie work the way we want it to work. And it's just, I was explaining it to Charlie, my brother, and he was saying like, but that's life, man! It's life! I'm like, oh God, Charlie. And like, yeah, I was like, damn, dude, that's a good one. You know, I guess I'm just not at this. This is one of those you can really read out the who this movie was made for.
Yeah.
I mean, the goddamn movie starts off with Pearl Jam, like this really, really like artsy intro, I don't know, slow song, and you can really tell where the demographics are going. I didn't care. Like, this is like one of those, oh God, the slow pace. Do we have a spoiler cast on this one?
No.
No, okay.
Not really necessary. Not really. Not,
maybe. I don't know. Like, nothing, like, Christian Bale's character is like this. He's pretty much Superman. Like, he's such a goody-two-shoe, you know? He's this perfect, perfect citizen. And all this bad stuff happens to him. Jeez, if you're such a good person, I mean, this is like, for example, I don't think it's really getting into spoilers. It was his first offense, you know? And I don't think, like, it was, like, really, he had to, like, what, I don't know. I don't know how law works, but, you know, it could be a different state, whatever. So, just...
I'm guessing there's something wrong with...
If he's such a good guy, he must have, like, done some, like, other priors, too, as well. Yeah, but... nothing but bad things happened to him, and it's just like...
Yeah.
Yeah. My biggest gripe, though, like, Christian Bale, I can deal with him just being the cross-bearer. He's... All these horrible things are going to happen to him. That's all right. His brother, Casey, oh my God, just mismatch character development, mismatch everything. His character, I like Casey Affleck a lot, actually, and it's just they did nothing with him, nothing that they wrote for him, nothing that they set up for him was believable. It was just, they had to have Woody Allen constantly remind us that
Woody Harrelson,
sing us a song.
It probably would have been a lot better if Woody Allen than
they had to have him constantly remind us that, oh God, your boy sure is tough, because no one believes it. The writing was awful. Casey's not a tough guy, and there's nothing about him that satisfied that character they're trying to build.
Yeah,
it was just they broke it right there, and it's just like, ugh, I can't get into this film at all. Side the slow pace and just Casey Affleck not being a very believable character match. Oh, I just, yeah.
I mean, I definitely agree that it was mundane, but I mean, the first half I was digging it. It could have been the fact that I was sitting next to you and you were scoffing at it the entire time. I'm like, I kind of dig this. Roy's clearly can't stand this movie. But,
it's torture.
I mean, I enjoyed the simplicity of it. Like, Christian Bale's character felt like a very old school, you know, he's a goody two shoes. He works at the mill, you know.
America.
Yeah. So, I was fine with that, you know. I mean, Casey Affleck, there's nothing necessarily that makes him stand out. I didn't really have an issue with him, but nothing stood out there. And then, you know, there's a point in the film, which is kind of lead up to the synopsis. Something happens to his brother, and that's where the movie becomes incredibly cliche, and like to the point where, like, I mean, I'm sure we at one point or another we were laughing because, like, it gets like silly how cliche that it actually gets, and it was brutal. Like, from that point on, it was just brutal. Forrest Whitaker was just really bad. He was doing like a Christian Bale Batman voice.
His accent was miserable.
Yeah. And I don't know, just a cliche. And, you know, I've even mentioned the Woody Harrelson character. I really did not like his character. I mean, he's this guy who's just a fucking evil guy, right? But they felt the need. Like, the opening scene of the movie is just a scene of him being evil. It's like, hey, we need to set up how evil he is. Look at this terrible stuff he does. It was
so evil.
It's silly. It's just silly. But, yeah, it was bad. It was bad.
Yeah.
I don't really have anything much to say about it. It's incredibly cliche, and
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's terrible. You dodged a bullet, Rob.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, when I read that that people compared it to a bad Bruce Springsteen song, I'm like, okay, I'm not gonna watch this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely not our demographic. They weren't planning for us to be there.
Yeah.
In headline news. There's a tribe, Rampart, that town that they portray as like backwater, hillbilly, inbred white people.
Yeah, yeah.
It's actually a reservation, uh-huh. and there's a huge lawsuit for the misrepresentation of that land, okay. or of that town.
Well, they use like, the actual like name of it and everything?
Oh, yeah. They use the Rampart Town. I didn't, you know, there's nothing that you can catch while you're watching the movie.
Yeah.
Just afterwards, the misrepresentation of their town. So the last names of the characters are even heavily used last names for the town. So, like, Woody Harrelson's character, DeGroat, that's eight people in this plaintiff case out of the 15, are actually DeGrouts, so they have the same last name as Woody Harrelson's character.
Insane.
Yeah, Van Duck, that's another name. They call their white trash parties, they call themselves the Jackson Whites. So you can see that's like a pun on being like a black hillbilly, right?
Yeah.
So that's just a part of like, it's a really derogatory word to use in that town. Because maybe they are white natives, you know? Maybe they are, you know, like very white passing natives. But that's a term that they use against themselves. So the movie stole that too as well. Jackson Whites, I guess it's a term they throw around loosely. And yeah, it's like a pretty heavy lawsuit. I think that's making more headlines in the damn movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't really have anything much to say. Do you have anything?
I don't think so, man.
All right, well, I'll wrap it up. I was enjoying the simplicity at first, but then it just became really bad, really cliche. I know I keep saying that word, but
yeah,
that perfectly describes like this movie. There's a particular scene that involves like, you know, the sun's coming up, and
dude,
it was so I
that was rough.
You know the scene in Gone in 60 Seconds, because
yeah,
that last climax scene where he is in like this, you know, mechanical factory. Having, you know, a duel with this other guy. That's where this movie goes. And when it did that and then followed by this sunset or sun rising scene,
yeah.
Like, I can't believe that they're doing this. Like, it's terrible. It's so bad.
Mm-hmm.
So
I remember that scene.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sorry.
There you go.
That scene reminded me of that one episode of The Mayor when he's stalking Andrea in the factory. I was like, this is so cheesy.
Oh, yeah.
Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Oh.
So I'd give it a 1.5 out of 5.
Yeah. I'd give it a 0.5 out of 5.
Okay.
Nothing about it I liked.
Cool. All right.
Give
so,
it a zero.
Moving on. I know, I'm not sure if you got to do it, Roy. I guess we could start and you could see if you could put something together. But
yeah, maybe I'll throw some from you guys. Yeah. I should have been browsing, but I want to be a part of the conversation.
Yeah,
so that
sure.
would have been distracting.
So seeing as you know, the year's coming to a close. We have a new year coming up. We used to do like a kind of like a bucket list segment that was short-lived. I think we did it maybe for one episode, but I thought we'd count down the top 5 films that are on our bucket list, you know, movies that we never saw that I know there's plenty that I haven't seen that I'm ashamed I haven't seen. And so 5 movies that I promise and we all promise individually that we will see next year. We will, you know, fix that. So do you want to start, Rob? Or?
Yeah, I kind of went with the classics.
Yeah, for sure.
I didn't really have time to really, like, sit and think. So mm-hmm. I kind of just went with all the big classic ones that I know I've never seen and wanted to.
Okay.
So my first one is Casablanca.
Yeah.
Actually, never seen that movie. So I'm definitely excited to see that one. Second one, too, I've never seen. Citizen Kane. It's a big one that I've never watched.
Uh-huh.
The Graduate.
Oh, it's a good one.
I've never seen that one. Number 4 is Vertigo by Alfred Hitchcock.
Okay.
And then my number 5 is North by Northwest.
Oh.
So Hitchcock. I got all the classics right there. Yeah. I don't really watch a lot of classic films, and I definitely should. And sometimes I'll stumble upon TCM on cable, but I never really, like, you know, sit through something because, like, I don't know. I just decided to change the channel. But yeah, definitely, I need to watch more classic films. So
yeah,
that's my list.
Okay. I guess I'll go next. My first one would be Blade Runner. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
It's in my collection back there, and I just never got around to seeing it. I tried to watch it on a few occasions, but wasn't ready for its slow pace. It was probably late at night. So, next up is The Godfather 2. I've only seen the first Godfather, and I hear that the second one is the pinnacle of the series. So I need to alleviate that that problem. Next, 2001, Space Odyssey.
Nice, nice. Yeah, it's a little boring.
Yeah, the same thing that one.
What?
I did try to watch it once, I believe, and wasn't able to. So,
do you own that too in the back?
I don't own that one. No, I rented it back when Netflix was only doing the DVDs through the mail. I remember I rented it a few times. I never watched it.
I can. I have it on Blu-ray. I can lend it to you on Blu-ray.
Sweet. Next up, Seven Samurai. I don't know. I haven't seen any Kurosawa films, and you got to start somewhere. So Seven Samurai seems to be his most popular. Then my last one is Being John Malkovich.
Ooh, it's a classic.
There was other films,
what?
You know. There was other films that I wanted to plug in there, but I ultimately went with John Malkovich. So yeah, that's my last one.
Are you good?
Yeah, I'm all done.
There was one movie you guys were doing before I joined you guys for the podcast, and it was for a long time. It was the cover photo for you guys were ranting and raving about it. It was the cover photo for the podcast page, the Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
Stoker. Yeah, that's Stoker. That's high up there. I'm gonna take Rob's Citizen Kane. That's another one. It's just like, why haven't I seen that?
Yeah.
Silly. That's it. I deleted a lot of movies. You know, usually there's a lot of movies sitting on your hard drive.
Yeah, for sure.
I recently deleted a lot of that. Oh, okay, I got one. The Deer Hunter. Didn't see that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. I love that movie.
I need to see that.
It's an amazing movie.
I had some others, like, I don't
Source
want to put on
Source Code? Is that the one with the rewinding time and all that? No, that's something else.
Source Code?
No, that is.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's with Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah, I didn't finish that movie, and I feel weird about that.
Everyone probably doesn't have to be there, but yeah, I mean, I did enjoy Source Code, but yeah,
cool.
It's not as memorable as Moon is, though.
Moon,
no, it's not. No,
so good. Moon, so good. I think that's it, man.
Okay.
I'm sure there's more, but I wish I didn't. What is this? No, it's a stupid movie.
Yeah, I would like to get more into Woody Allen as well.
Sarnia, that one that Natraj loves.
Syriana,
yeah.
Oh, no.
Wait, George Clooney?
No, it's all right.
It's all right. Yeah, it's kind of bloated. It's a bloated film. I don't know. Yeah, when I watched it, it was getting all this attention, and it's just a really bloated movie, in my opinion.
Okay.
All right. I didn't really do research into. I didn't really look back into what I watched, but. Yeah, we'll do quick what we watch segment.
Sure. I have some.
Yeah. I'll start and I'll just be over with mine. I watched Bully last night, which was a documentary I had been wanting to watch for quite a while. It was on my queue for a bit. And I thought it was okay overall. Like, I talked with Robert about this, but it's just not, they don't bring up any like talking points or kind of solutions, you know, to the problem. I know it is a difficult problem, and it's kind of hard to, obviously, you know, it's incredibly tough to figure out, but the movie doesn't offer up anything like that. And then even the aesthetic that they go with, I mean, instead of like being like kind of a retrospective documentary, it's more of a, let's, you know, put a camera with these kids and follow them as they're on the school bus or they're in school or they're at home. So it's kind of hard to watch that and not feel like stuff is, you know, ringing false. You know, like if there's a camera there in your face, obviously you're not going to get reality. because of that. So that kind of bugged me about it. But, I mean, there were certain aspects I liked. There's this one kid that they followed that I thought that was very interesting. And there's actually a couple parts of the film where that involve this one principal and just, like, kind of the way she, you know, the way she goes at situations, the way she talks to the kids, and, like, it was completely off base, like, the things that she was saying. So that was pretty, it's infuriating to watch, but it's still engaging to see how there's people who really don't know what they're doing or know how to handle the situation. So that was interesting. But overall, you know, I wish the movie would have dove into the topic more than it actually did. So, yeah. That's all I got.
Okay. I've actually seen one of my favorite Indian movies finally. I can't believe I haven't seen it yet. Powwow Highway is from 1989, and it's just so well done. I mean, for 80, you know, just, it was so good. Like, the Indian humor is, like, so heavy and so sharp, and it goes contemporary, it goes historical, but not much historical, but very, very contemporary. So it's really right off the storms of real events that are going on in native country, like huge political battles and such. Mm-hmm. I think it really extends the hand of, like, how much the government will fuck you. You know, like, it's awesome, like, how detailed it is. Like, it's a small reserve in Minnesota, and they're doing they're being proposed by half-bloods to dig for oil and such, and they, you know, like, the leaders don't want that. You know, these young leaders, they know, like, that's not happening. So the anti-aggressors that are against the oil companies fuck with this the main activist's leader sister in Albuquerque. So you have Minnesota FBI, or, you know, oil tycoons that have governmental ties that can mess with his sister all the way in the other side of the country. So that's kind of the mission of the film, is to free her out of jail. And it's got a very, like, Forrest Gump story to it, like a simple man, but he really, you know, he enjoys his life. There's one of the strong, like, male leads is a Forrest Gump-like character, and this is 89, so before Forrest Gump. And he's very comfortable who he is as a person, and even though others don't. So it's got that Forrest Gump vibe to it. And they make it across the country in an Indian car. That's kind of like sort of like cliche indie film. You know, like, oh, let's make this beater and do a road trip to save your sister, you know? Yeah. But it was really good. Like, they cut through so much contemporary history, real history, native humor, up the wazoo. Oh, it's like one of my top films. It was so good. I can't believe I haven't seen it until recently.
Okay.
Are we going to go back and forth, or?
Yeah, I think you guys should alternate, for sure.
Yeah, go ahead, Rob.
What I watched, well, I'm going to start with the earlier one was Prisoners with Jake Gyllenhaal and Hugh Jackman.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I don't think that. I talked about it on the podcast. I could yeah, work off you as well.
I was supposed to goddamn see that.
You guys talked about it already?
No, no. I didn't, so me and you could talk about it a little bit.
I was really loving, like, I guess, the first... It's a 2.5-hour movie, right? So I was... Yeah. Was it? Or, I don't know.
It was pretty long, yeah.
But I was... The first 2 hours were amazing. Just the pacing of the film, you following around the detective, but also following around the perspective of the father, you know, trying to piece together what's going on. It was just, the clues were, like, so well placed and just so well, like, hidden at the same time. I don't even know if that makes any sense, but it was definitely a great story to watch unfold. Jake Gyllenhaal is, which sucks because, like, the main focus was on Hugh Jackman, but Jake Gyllenhaal really, 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 like, carried this movie on his back. Like, his character was amazing. But then somewhere along the line, it just turns really cliche, and then when everything starts to unravel, it unravels like a cliche mystery movie, and then when you find out what's going on, you're kind of like left with a kind of a bad taste in your mouth, because you were enjoying the way it was being handled so well. And when you're finally everything is revealed, you're like, really? Like, oh, because the way you did it was so well, why not give us a better, like, payoff? Mm-hmm. But no, yeah.
It definitely comes together nicely. I mean...
It does.
They fit into place. But I guess I would agree with what you said, because it does really just turn into a whodunit, you know, and review. Yeah. The review is definitely underwhelming, even though, like I said, it does like make sense in the grand scheme of everything. I mean, I did like how it was unpredictable.
Definitely.
Yeah. And yeah, I thought it was strong. Like we had talked about it, and you mentioned Jake Gyllenhaal's character, and he really does carry the film. He's unique, you know. Like he's this, you know, really good detective, but at the same time, he's just, I guess he more superficial reasons he has a certain look to him that just felt different enough to make add to his Definitely. Character. So.
But I definitely like the fact that, you know, he's like this tattooed guy. Yeah. You really don't get his backstory at all.
Yeah.
You really don't know anything about him, which I really love for some reason, you know.
Yeah.
It kind of leaves it up to you because, especially with a lot of these characters, you don't really know anything about him outside of, like, especially like Hugh Jackman's history, why he has a fucking, what do you call those rooms in the basement? A bunker in his basement, you know, filled with stuff like canned food and all that stuff. It's never really explained. You just kind of those things are kind of just there, and I really liked it. I really liked that about the film. And I remember I kind of really didn't enjoy the ending. I told you that on your keyboard's really freaking me out. The ending actually, now that I think about it more, it's really good.
Yeah.
The reason why I really enjoy the ending now is the more I thought about it, if it goes any further than that, it kind of takes away from the atmosphere of the film.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was a great way to end the movie now. I really do.
Last shot is pretty perfect. It's pretty
perfect. Yeah, it's a perfect shot. At first, like, yeah, it's perfect. It's a perfect shot, but I don't know if it's a great ending. But then thinking about it, like, yeah, you know what? It is the perfect way to end the movie because
you already know what's going to come of it, I think.
Yeah, you already know what's going to happen. If you go any further than that, yeah, you're taken out of what was going on.
Yeah.
It's like what was centered in the film. You're getting sent into a whole new feeling, and that's not the point, you know?
And it's possible that you could get that, you know, traditional, sappy type ending. You don't want that. Leave some openness there, even though, you know, if you think of it from a logistical standpoint, this is probably what's going to occur. But yeah,
and I think it has to do with the fact, like I said earlier, you don't really know anything outside of these characters about except what's happening to them right now at that moment in their lives.
Yeah.
So I think that's the point, because like the daughter's been found. And, you know, the main point of this film is finished. So if you go outside of that, then the film is like ruined. So I think it was a great way to end the movie.
Yeah.
For sure.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah, I enjoyed it. You know, it's not going to make my best of list, but I did enjoy it a lot. So,
yeah.
Hey, you guys sold the crap out of that movie. Now I have to see it.
Yeah, it's good, man. It's surprisingly good.
It's awesome. Good,
man. The first 2 hours are like are so fun to watch, man. You're just like, just enjoying the
I'm excited. Hours. Yeah, people were going crazy about that movie on Facebook. Just, you know, a status here, a status there. Prisoners, prisoners, prisoners. So it was a real popular one. You don't really see that too much for things besides, like, The Hobbit. I saw a documentary. It's on Netflix. It's really, really good. I just put on this film. Thought I was going to just fall asleep. Got to put a documentary on and fall asleep. It's MISS Representation, and it's about the misrepresentation of women in film, and it is fantastic. It's just... it's so bad, like the whole idea of like our standards. We all think the FCC handles everything and that there's some standard, like you can't show leg or you can't show, you know, too much upper body past 7-9 o'clock, right? Nothing. Yeah. It's nothing. It's all Wild West, dude. You watch this thing and it's just like those laws are meant to be believed but not followed. Like it's so unregulated the way women can be mistreated in media and basically turned into objects and not people. And it's due to representation. Like, it doesn't make sense that women aren't even, like, anywhere near... Condoleezza Rice explains it really well, that it's the same thing. Like, when she talks about women, she talks about minorities. So she'll say, it's because women don't have this. And she'll say, it's because, you know, the same with minorities. They don't have that representation. If you don't see representation, you don't believe in yourself. So if you don't see minorities on TV, if you don't see women in power, you don't think you can be in power, even though they have the biggest... they vote more than us. There's more of that, you know, there's that right there. That's a demographic that should never be like untamed, like uncontested. Like, there's so much political prowess. Like, there's when women go into politics, the women want to take them down. Yeah. They think they're catty, or they think they don't look good, or, you know, it's all about representation. And it was really good. Like, I ended up not sleeping at all and just taking notes and putting on my armor, ready to fight the patriarchy. Fuck the patriarchy, bro. Yeah. I overheard a little bit of your conversation when we were playing hockey.
Oh, it's a good conversation.
Like, what's up with, you know, women wearing makeup? It's because men, the patriarchy has decided that men get, we get a free base. We look good because the whole system made it so that we can look good. It's our system, dude.
Yeah.
Like, we have decided that it's a man's world and we don't have to shave. You do. And you have to wear a lot of makeup because you got to look goddamn doll-like, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
And it's a really, really, really good documentary.
I mean, yeah, what I was trying to get at, like, me and Cynthia were, like, discussing stuff like that. And, yeah, I mean, with the makeup thing, I mean, yeah, I mean, it is. The point was I was trying to get across was, yeah, I could look at something and see it for what it is. I mean, the whole basis of why women wear makeup or why, you know, yeah, like you said, they should shave their armpits or whatnot. Or they shouldn't be hairy. Like, that was created, you know. And even though that is what I'm attracted to, that's because I'm a product of the society that I grew up in.
Of the patriarchy.
You know, yeah. So,
of course.
That's it. I mean, but I can still see it for what it is, that it became that way for a certain reason. You know, there was an evolution of how we got to this point. So I could see, like, what's wrong with it, but at the same time, still living it, right? So...
Oh, of course. Yeah. It's acknowledgement of problematic behaviors. There's a difference between living, enjoying something and enjoying something that's problematic and not really questioning it, and then in knowing something that's problematic and enjoying it. There's a big difference.
Yeah.
So
which is definitely hypocritical, but it's hard not to be. So, yeah.
Exactly. It's fantastic. I highly recommend it. It's a good watch. It gets you thinking about, like, a lot of, like, double standards that we have in this nation, like you were talking about.
Yeah.
And it really does matter, like, that everything in power, there's no women, like, in any sort of position of media. So if there's no regulations in what can be shown on TV and how women are represented, like American Hustle, what a brand new movie. Frozen, what a brand new movie when these characters don't do the stereotypical things that they've been told to, and it makes for a better story.
Yeah.
And there's no CEOs that are women, and, like, it's very, like, what, 1%, 1.5%, you know, most of the time in media. So not even having, like, a standard governmental watchdog, I guess, of what can and can't be shown on TV, doesn't matter because they're not in control, you know?
Yeah.
So it's pretty wicked, man. Numbers game. I mean, it's big. It's, you know, it's one of those big topics. Like you said, bullying, right? It's a huge topic.
Yeah.
These are, the solutions are in education and awareness, you know?
Yeah.
And it's a long, hard fight, you know, these things. But it just doesn't make sense when it's 50% of the population.
Yeah.
I'll speed right through these. I started Bob's Burger, loving it.
Okay.
Started Doctor Who, it's pretty good. Really strange, like all the warnings. Strange beginning. But okay. I'm pretty warm to it. It's all right.
Okay.
Portlandia, trying to wrap that guy up. I'm like, I don't know where I'm at, but I like that show. Trying to, you know, catch up. Yeah. Aziz Ansari, I seen his that recent one that he released. And that was good.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Okay. Rob?
I want something. Oh. Yeah.
I know you're getting
tired. I saw a documentary.
We'll wrap this up soon.
No. It's my sinuses. I'm sick. It's all fucking bothering me.
It sucks.
I saw a documentary last night, called The Act of Killing, which is one of the most disturbing and haunting documentaries I've ever seen. Seriously.
Wow.
So I saw the director.
Netflix?
I saw the director's cut. No, I actually acquired it. I downloaded it.
Nice.
I acquired it. So,
I'm assuming
it
iTunes.
A couple weeks.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. It's early release.
Digitally.
I downloaded it digitally, let's just say. I downloaded the director's cut, so it was a bit longer. I felt that if I had downloaded the regular theatrical version, mm-hmm. probably would have put it... The longer version, it was great. Like, it was a great documentary. It's just moments where it's kind of like, where you're kind of like drawn out, and it's just kind of things in between moments where, I mean, there was like certain scenes that were just put there to kind of give you some breathing room. And I mean, they would kind of get tedious at times for me because the documentary is like 2 hours and 40 minutes long. So
yeah.
I didn't want to see those moments. I wanted it to continue. But, it's pretty much about these guys who were part of this paramilitary, how do you say? I guess that's in Indonesia,
yeah.
where like these gangsters who worked for the militaries who were death squad leaders in Indonesia back in the 60s. And they were asked to reenact their mass killings
yeah.
in cinematic form, and they could use and include whatever genre they wish, which is really obscure. Like watching these guys reenact their torture scenes and their mass killing scenes, which is weird because like these guys kind of are so messed up by what they've done that their scenes are very kind of like artful in a way. They're very bizarre. Like they're not really like straightforward. They're really like out there, and it's just really kind of it's a really obscure documentary.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty much deals with the fact that how someone who has done like this act of killing, especially thousands of people, how are they dealing with this? How are they you know living with this throughout their lives? And
yeah.
It's very, very just interesting to watch that, and very interesting to see these characters just feel very like unemotional and very like you know they feel no guilt at all and actually kind of. Like are proud about what they've done. It's so crazy. It's a really crazy trippy documentary. Definitely should watch it. So I don't want to give up more of it because it's definitely an experience.
Downloading cool. now.
Nice.
Why am I seeing your desktop, Anthony?
Oh, I don't know. I was messing with Google Share.
Anything else you got, Rob?
No, that's it.
Okay. I actually looked up my Netflix. I'm just going to speed through them just like Roy did. I saw a documentary called Knuckle, which was about this feuding Irish family. Well, I mean, they're cousins in Ireland, and you know they've been feuding for decades, and so it's just about they'll put together these bare-knuckle fights with each other to kind of, you know, settle the differences. Well, not really settle them, but I guess to try to, like...
Oh, it's still on.
But it was an interesting movie. The most interesting part of it was... It was kind of cool, like, in order to kind of, like, call out the other families, they would send them these videos, so it felt like... You're watching like these wrestling videos. You know how the wrestlers would have these monologues where they'll call out the person they're fighting or whatnot. That's what these families would do. They would send each other videos and stuff like that. So that was interesting. Other than that, you know, there's you know the wives of these men who do this and how it kind of they totally disagree with what's going on, and then the kids that are being surrounded by this. So obviously, it's just going to perpetuate itself and kind of keep. Going because that's what the kids are, you know, that's what they grow up around. So, but you know, the filmmaking itself is nothing special. I mainly watched it for the subject matter, and that was cool. I finally watched Shut Up and Play the Hits.
I've seen your 2 cents on that one. That was pretty funny.
I mean, yeah, when I first started watching it, that was pretty, it felt pretentious to me, and I actually was putting off watching it for a while because I never really got into LCD sound system. And I wanted to, like, fully appreciate their music before I saw the movie. But I never got around to really getting into their discography.
You didn't do that.
So I'm like, I watched a movie and it made me, you know, kind of fall in love. Not fall in love with the band, but really enjoyed their music. And I was listening to it, like, a couple days after that. But, you know, there's too much music out there. So it's hard to stay on one band for too long. But I enjoyed the documentary. Thought it was good. The performances were great. You know, like, what's his name? James Murphy. He's a really interesting guy. He's really kind of hard to figure out. So that made it pretty intriguing. It's also, you know, makes it a little bit maddening because you're not really understanding where he's coming from or, like, what he's all about. But it's still very interesting to watch. And I actually watched this other thing twice. It's a stand-up show. It's Mike Birbiglia.
Oh, yeah.
And it's called My Girlfriend's Boyfriend. And if you guys haven't seen it, like, I know he did that movie Sleepwalk With Me, which is more like a traditional movie, but this is just stand-up. But I really, like, loved his stand-up. Like,
he's a good guy.
It has this moments of, like, he's just putting them out there, just, like, extreme sincerity and just kind of, like, bearing all to tell these different stories. And there's so many moments in the stand-up that, like, have so much heart to them. But at the same time, it's also really funny. So it's on Netflix. You guys should, like, if you haven't seen it yet, it's called My Girlfriend's Boyfriend. It's really, really good. Really good storytelling.
Sounds good. So awesome.
That's pretty much it for me.
Oh, I saw I saw Spectacular Now.
Oh yeah,
a couple of nights ago. Yeah, definitely enjoyed it. It's a good. It's a very short. There were a lot of like holes in the film, I thought, but it was really enjoyable. The ending was really touching for sure.
Yeah.
It was just, I felt like there was a lot of things that were very unresolved for a lot of characters. So. Yeah. But it's a good look.
Yeah, it's just kind of like the starting point to where these characters might go, right? So.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I definitely enjoyed it. What were you going to say? Sorry.
Yeah. No, the whole, the alcoholism thing, I don't know, it just felt very, like very TV movie, like TV movie for kids, you know, after school movie.
For sure.
It felt like something they had shot out of Saved by the Bell or something, because he wasn't really, you couldn't really tell that the guy was really that bad of a drinker, you know. They just kind of like, oh, I had this in my hand and I'm drinking it, I'm an alcoholic, you know. So it was just, there were moments like that where it just felt really forced. But, I mean, the character that I really loved was the girl from, she was in The Descendants. She's going to be in the new Spider-Man, the next Spider-Man. Yeah. What's her name? She played his girlfriend in the movie. She was very, very... her character was very loving. She obviously cared about the guy, and no matter what was going on, you know, she wanted to, like, you know, figure it out with him and stuff. It was very sad at the same time, too, because she was kind of blinded by that love for him.
For sure.
But, I mean... she was such a sweet character. Yeah. But yeah, sorry, it was good.
Cool.
Yeah, that's it. I mean.
All right, you have anything else, Roy?
No, I'm good.
All right, well, we're going to wrap it up. If you guys don't mind, well, Robert and Roy staying on for a second after I end the show. But yeah, guys, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with a review of Wolf of Wall Street, and hopefully we'll be reviewing both of those. So I'll see you guys then. Take care.
Later.
Later.